Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
Welcome back to another episode.
Part two.
Bet y'all weren't expecting me to be back so soon, but I am. We're very excited to be back again and finish up this little two-parter that we have going on.
Yes.
Yes.
It was interesting doing a two-parter instead of a one-parter this time because I felt like I could go more in-depth on things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make it a habit. Like, if the case needs it, then I'll do a two-parter, but...
It's not so much the time crunch that we put y'all on. Yeah. We try to do the episodes between 45 to an hour at most an hour. But sometimes cases do need a little bit more time.
I think we've done a couple that's just a little, I would say about 45 minutes to an hour, which is crazy because when we first started doing this, we were barely hitting 30 to 45 minutes. And I feel like that kind of shows how much we have grown is now we're hitting closer to an hour each time, just a little under or a little over on each one. So I think it kind of just shows how far we've come. We're making progress.
Yeah. With Audrey's research going more into detail, making it longer, and I guess our responses getting a little better.
Yeah.
Not us being as awkward all the time.
And now if we can just figure out the technical parts. But we're getting there. We have found some stuff. We're just waiting till we can order it because we on a budget, y'all. On a budget. And the stuff is expensive.
Very much so.
And I didn't realize, I'm not going to go through all the technical parts of it, but like I didn't realize some of it. I'm like, oh, well, that would have been good to know
before
I ordered all this other stuff. I could have ordered that instead.
So it's kind of just like we're
learning.
We're doing it on the spot. We're learning as we go.
That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, and also, like, going back into, like, the two-parters, I got to thinking the other night, if anybody wanted us to do, like, a two-part on, like, an episode we've already done, like, maybe y'all wanted to
revisit
an episode we've already done. I know we got a lot of, like, I've seen a lot of commotion on the Brandi Wells case.
Yes.
So, all over TikTok.
They've been resharing. Of course, they're trying to get fresh eyes on it, so. Go to our page, share it as much as you can, get it out there so everybody can see.
You'll have any information.
Yeah, I mean, any information.
Literally.
Bring that family some justice. I mean, as far as I know, there hasn't been any new updates or anything. I think it's just them trying to get the word out again. So please go and share our Brandi Wells case. Share it with everybody. Share it on Facebook. Share it on TikTok.
Share it with a friend. Talk about it. Spread awareness.
I would love to have answers on that one.
Me too. But with that being said, I mean, we could definitely, like, as cases, some of these cases we've done do hopefully start getting more information on them, we will definitely try to revisit. For right now, it's our first two-parter, and I was actually really excited for tonight to finish it out.
See what happened?
Yeah.
Well, before we jump in, I did want to cover a few things, like some housekeeping that I needed to do. One is, you guys may realize, I never put the YouTube video part of it. Like, we have the audio on YouTube, but we don't have the video. I'm trying. I had a work trip this week, so I was out of town for a few days. And
she did not work. She floated down the lazy river.
It's work and a vacation. I love that trip. So, I work in forestry and agriculture. And so, I go to a lot of these annual state forestry meetings. And so, just making connections with our customers, meeting new customers, trying to, you know, shake hands, kiss babies, that kind of thing. But I love it because I talk to these guys all the time throughout the year, but I never meet them face to face. email, phone calls, text messages literally all year long.
And I have blind date.
Yeah, I have no idea what they look like. Like, one of my favorite ones, the first time he met me in person, he goes, "You're young." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, "I thought you were like a 60-year-old woman." And I was like, "Okay,
that's great.
Great. Awesome." So, yeah, so I never got it out. I was busy. I was out of town. I was enjoying my downtime that I had while I was there. If you ever get the chance to go to the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles, chef's kiss. I told Tori today I want to go celebrate a birthday there because, I mean, they have the best pool, best lazy river. It's just, it's a really cool spot. So I enjoyed it. Also, my hair is different now.
Yes, she dyed her hair.
Dyed my hair, guys. We're bringing in fall vibes. It's 150,000 degrees outside, but I thought maybe if I went darker and got ready for fall, maybe it would kickstart it.
Yeah, notice how greasy it is.
I'll kill you. Another housekeeping, and I forgot to mention to this. So, when I said the name of the town last episode, I think I said, like, Waukesha or something like that. That is not the name of the town. It's Waukesha.
Oh, yeah. So you did say it really weird.
Butchered that. I knew it was Waukesha. But, like, when I read it, I said, like, Waukesha or something. And Josh is like, "Girl, that's not the name of this town." I was like, "What?" And so I went back and listened. I was like, "You know what?
You're right.
So, Waukesha. We're in Waukesha. A couple of other updates is our socials are growing.
Yay!
So we are almost to 800 followers on Facebook, which is pretty dope, pretty rad.
Pretty impressive, if I might say.
So share it. Please share. Share on your Facebook. Share it with everybody.
Because it's, like, kind of crazy to think, like, oh, yeah, it's, like, 800 people, but I don't even think I know 800 people in my lifetime. So all of these people are listening to us. I mean, we are basically...
Well, but that's the thing, is although we have 800 followers on Facebook, we do not have 800 people listening yet. So listen, like, share it. Aww. We need listeners. I just really burst in her bubble. I mean, we do have several listeners, and it is growing. Like, each week that we post it, like, we get more listeners on that, on each episode. So we do appreciate everybody that's been here and sticking with us, and hopefully it grows. TikTok, we're at 157, which isn't bad, especially for a millennial that has no idea how to run a TikTok. I'm thinking about handing it over to Tori and Elizabeth and being like, "Here you go, guys."
You post some pretty millennial stuff on TikTok, but it's funny. It's cringy funny.
I know. And so that's kind of like the vibe that I like. And so I'm like, do I really want to change it now? Or do we just keep it?
We just keep
it cringe. We're going to keep it cringe, y'all. And then the big exciting news, we were talking about listeners. Guys, we are almost to 2,000 total downloads. That's huge.
That's very good.
I cannot believe we're already there. We got just over 1,800 right now. So that's pretty awesome. So I really, again, we just can't thank you guys enough for listening and sharing and keep doing it. Get this.
Keeping us wanting to keep posting and wanting to see where it goes.
Because I love talking to Tori and I love talking to Josh and Seth. But it's also really cool to think that other people want to hear what we're saying.
And also, like we said at the beginning, you know, followers or no followers, we have fun doing this. We enjoy doing it. And so
much fun.
We need to include other people into this
craziness.
This witch cult, whatever we are.
we need to come up with, like, fan names or, like, you know what I mean? Like, how everybody has, like, Morbid has the weirdos. And I'm trying to think of others. Crime Junkies, they're junkies. And we need one for you guys. So if you have any recommendations, send it to us.
Yeah.
So I also have some crime updates. Have you been on TikTok?
I have been on TikTok.
Have you seen anything about the Mendez brothers?
I saw it and it broke my heart that he got denied.
I am so upset. Eric Mendez was denied parole. And if you know true crime, you know the Menendez brothers. Like, you know what they've gone through.
And you also probably know about Gypsy Rose. So this is the point that I make when talking about it.
I know what you're going to say, and I agree 100%.
She had everything to do with what she did. She got released. She got a J chance to start over, have a better life. Why
can't we do that for them?
I wonder if, okay, and I don't mean to be that person, but it really makes me think, like, it's genders playing a role
like,
in it, you know, like,
exactly.
If it would have been a man who killed his mother and not Gypsy Rose, would he have gotten released?
Exactly.
And that's just like, it's so unfair. And also Lyle is supposed to be going on trial. Mm-hmm. And if they accept him and not his brother,
oh my gosh.
But at the same time, I want him to be released. But also, like, if they release him and not his brother, that's
heartbreaking.
It's either way, things are going to go south for like the
crime. Imagine how, like, sweet and sour that would be for Eric. Like, thank God my brother is out. Thank God he can start over.
He made it. Like, he got to get out.
Here I am.
Still stuck.
Heartbreaking.
It's horrible. If y'all, like, have different views on it, definitely like to see those views. Because I was kind of battling it at first because I was like, do they deserve to get out? But I feel like everyone deserves a second chance. They were young. And
knowing all the evidence now about the abuse, the sexual abuse, the physical abuse, emotional abuse, and what they went through, I feel like they've answered for their crimes. Isn't prison to rehabilitate these people and put them back out and make them a better person? Well, these guys have done that.
They've served their time.
Like, you're telling them no, which is very ironic because of the case that we're covering and what we're fixing to talk about again. Yeah. It's wild. So we're definitely going to cover the Mendez brothers, but I kind of want to see what happens with Lyle before we do it. So
another thing, I don't know if you've been keeping up with the whole Chrisleys, but they started their series.
I guess I haven't been watching that one.
Yeah, you know, okay, so you know they got released from prison.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're starting, like, a whole, like, I guess, documentary about their life
in prison
and after prison. Like,
you're talking about the dad that he's blonde, the mom's blonde, the daughter's blonde, and the dad's a little
fruity.
Yeah.
Yes.
You
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And how they got locked up for some stupid reason, and the judge literally said, like, I'm only doing this because y'all are celebrities, and celebrities have to, like,
answer for,
or not answer, but, like, set an example, like, celebrities over.
See, I haven't watching that one very close.
It's a crazy case, especially, like, for how long they got locked up for such a little thing. Like,
yeah, see, I don't know enough about that one. I don't know.
I'm going to cover that one if y'all want me to cover it.
Cover it, because I want to know. Because, like I said, I just kind of stayed away from it. It'd be nice to know the actual details of what happened, what they did. What led up to it. The other one that I want to talk about, have you seen about the 7-month-old missing baby?
Are you talking about where she was, like, at the grocery store?
And
the guy walks up.
It said hola in here. Yes. Well, update.
The PO.
It's crazy. Yes, the POV has been wild. Yeah, and he hits him in the face with, like, a maraca, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like that.
That's not what happened.
Yeah. Well, update, parents have been arrested.
What?
Today, the parents were arrested.
Okay, so what happened there?
So they have not released why they've been arrested. I mean, obviously we know why, but we don't know any details yet. We don't know what evidence they have. We don't have any of that yet. For those that don't know the story, a mom supposedly went to, I can't remember what it's called, but it's kind of like an academy, like a sports store. And she's like, oh, I'm going to change my baby's diaper before I go in real quick. And she lays the baby down, and supposedly a man walked up to her, said hola, punched her in the face, knocked her out, and stole her baby. Well, when you look at her face, she does have a black eye, but it was already healing. Like, it was an old black eye. And then they noticed a lot of issues with pictures of baby Emmanuel. Like, I think he's, like, cross-eyed or something like that. And it's very pronounced. And they're wondering if dad didn't have something to do with what was going on with him, because he had been charged with child abuse before. And I'm not talking, like, which child abuse isn't, like, a little thing. I'm not talking about, like, he whooped a child's butt and got in trouble. No, he severely, severely hurt his first child, or I guess it's his first child, with his ex-wife to the point to where, like, she's disabled now. He abused her so bad that that child is now has physical disabilities because he abused her so bad. Well, everybody saw through their BS because the fake crying, the sniffles, and just the way they were talking, everybody clocked it real quick and were like, she's lying, he's lying, something's going on. But there was no proof of it because there was no video cameras. And all this TikTok's been blown up about it. So if you haven't looked at it, look up Baby Emmanuel. Pray that they find him. I don't think they're going to find him alive, unfortunately, which breaks my heart. But at least find him and let him rest in peace. So
I know we're so, like, chatty on this episode. Really debriefing, but talking about TikToks and true crime that we've saw. I don't know. I think I remember their name. I don't know. This guy, and I hope they get justice. Like, there's so much happening. So basically, I went down this whole rabbit hole. I'm going to tell you about this other one off camera because it's just a yap, but it involves Blueface Baby, but it's a yap for later. This one is about a couple on TikTok and they're called the Stapletons or something.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And she's like defending him, like, and there's picture proof of him downloading this stuff. Like,
I was looking at something. We're actually at Academy today to pick up softball pants for May. She's got a tournament, guys. Tomorrow she has her first tournament with her select team. She's nervous, but she's gonna do so good. But we had to go get her white pants because we had every other color
but white.
But I was looking at TikTok and I was looking at that one, and they were talking about dropping names from like the jail or something like that that they've been talking to, and people are like, don't put these innocent people out there that they were defending you as a friend because they didn't know the whole story. And now that they do, they have disowned you and you're still releasing their name to the public saying, look, these people defended me.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah,
that's a whole thing. There's also another couple. I can't remember their name, but he's in jail and she like posted like nothing happened and he went to jail because they found like this hard drive that he had, like, basically how they described it was, you can only have this, like, if you made the content yourself, like.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was.
Child.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well.
And she was like, come with me to buy organic meat for dinner. Dinner for one, because your husband's locked up. Like, you're not going to comment. And they're, like, they have quite a bit of followers. And she's just, like, right over her head. I'm like, what are you?
People like that are in denial. Like, are they narcissists? Like, do they think they can hide it? And
I think that could be my biggest fear right there, is thinking you know someone, you're married to this guy forever, you have kids with him.
And then
you find, like, this out. Oh, I would not. It's a tape
on Who the Bleep Did I Marry. Do you ever watch Who the Bleep Did I Marry?
No, but I need to.
It's good. It's good. All right. Well, let's go ahead and dive into our case here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. First a drink.
Yeah.
Homegirl over here treated me to my first Dutch Bros coffee. I'm a Starbucks girly. I'd never had Dutch Bros before. And she's like, you know what?
It's so good.
Let's get it.
I always get their blondies, but I really like Seven Brew a little bit better.
I got the Golden Eagle.
Yeah.
It's good, guys.
Blondie's is from Seven Brew.
So not sponsored, but...
Yeah.
Seven Brew, Dutch Bros, Starbucks, any
Duncan,
of them.
Dunkin', Squares.
Any coffee, we'll take it. All right, so we are... Just a little recap, that way we kind of remember what we talked about last week. 2014, Waukesha. Not Waukesha, or Keisha, or whatever I said. Waukesha, Wisconsin. Peyton befriends kind of the weird kid in class named Morgan. They become best friends. 2 years later, Anissa starts school with the girls. So now all three of them are really good friends. Morgan and Anissa kind of gravitate towards each other, feel a little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bonding over like dark things, creepypasta, horror, gore. And they're just a little
quirky
out there.
Yeah.
Weird. Morgan and Anissa find the story of Slender Man on the internet, and they want to become his proxies. So in May of 2014, the girls have a sleepover for Morgan's birthday. the girls go to the park and they end up stabbing Peyton 19 times. 19 times. Morgan and Anissa leave Peyton there and take off after promising to go get her help, but no intention of doing so.
Mm-hmm.
They end up walking for about 5 hours before they are finally found on the side of the road, covered in blood. In the meantime, Peyton is found after bleeding out for 20 minutes, barely clinging to life. It said if the knife went the width of a hair deeper, it would have cut a major artery and she would have been gone. Peyton's rushed to the hospital while the other two are questioned about the events, both pointing the fingers at each other about being the leader of the plan. Morgan is emotionless and cold, while Anissa shows very little emotion. We left off where Anissa tackled Peyton to the ground and Morgan said, "Don't be afraid, I'm just a little kitty," and stabbed Peyton, and they're now questioning them. So I did a little bit more research and found a little bit more of their interrogation, so I have a quick little snippet of that. The detective actually asked Morgan how they started coming up with the plan, and did they just like start talking about it? Like, how did this come about? And
yeah.
Morgan was just like, yeah, yep. I think she even said, yeah. She didn't say, yeah. She was just like, yep. So weird. The detective asked, well, what was the plan? And Morgan just replied, to kill her. I might as well just say it. We were trying to kill her. And mind you, these are 12-year-old girls. 12-year-old girls. Two of them just stabbed their best friend. And she's just acting like she's telling them about going to get ice cream on a Tuesday. She again said, I don't know why it was necessary. It just seemed necessary. So this kind of made the detectives wonder, like, what's going on with her mental health? You know, is she easily manipulated? Does she have any control over making her own decisions? And so the detective again asked, why was it necessary? And all Morgan said was, because. Like, that's all she's, because.
Like, what?
So normally when criminals commit a crime, they always have an excuse of why. Like, she owed me money, or he did this. Like, they always have an excuse. But they're like, Morgan and Anissa really just didn't have a legitimate excuse of why they did it.
They're just like, we just did it because we wanted to do it.
Basically, the only thing that they really mentioned was being worried something would happen to their family if they didn't do it. The detectives were trying to find out who's the leader, because they're trying to determine who they're going to charge with what, because that will affect their charges. Like, who decided on the plan? Who actually stabbed her?
Who was a conspirer?
Yeah, it does affect with how they're going to charge them. But both girls were still blaming each other, and Anissa said that she was actually surprised, but also kind of excited to prove that Cylinder Man was real, because there are a lot of skeptics out there. She said she was surprised, but didn't want to leave Morgan by herself because who knows how many creeps are out there. Girl, you are the creep. You are literally the creep.
It's so weird because Morgan was like so close with Peyton.
Yeah.
Best but yet friends. She chose to do that with Anissa.
Like, yeah. Wild. And then we do determine that, which I may mention it a little bit later, Morgan is the one that actually stabbed Peyton.
Yes.
So the two original best friends are the ones that were, she actually stabbed her. Anissa then went on to talk about Jeff the killer and that he was real and that he had actually killed his family. So if he is real, then others could be real too, like trying to justify why she thinks Slender Man is real. She said that she thought she should tag along with Morgan. Like, those were her exact words. I just thought I should tag along with Morgan. Almost like she's trying to distance herself from what they did to Peyton, making people wonder if she fully understands, like, what's real life and what, like, did she think this was real life or did she think, like, this is just a game? Like, did she not fully comprehend what they were doing?
Yeah, was she, like, disassociating?
Basically. Anissa even compared her looks to Jeff the Killer. And the detective asked if she cut her hair to look like this Jeff person on Creepypasta. And she said, no, it was just a coincidence. And, like, he's asking her questions about it because her haircut is very similar to this Jeff the killer guy. And the detectives at this point were like, okay, are they doing a copycat crime? Or, but they determined, no, it wasn't a copycat crime. Like, they just fully believed that these creepypasta stories were real.
And it's just like, that's a thing too. It's so crazy that you could see their innocence in a way, like with the, like, I hate
dark and twisted innocence.
Yeah, like, I hate to say it like this, but like, they, Anissa went and did this off of a limb, like off of her imagination, mm-hmm. thinking that Slenderman was real. You know, like, she, they literally could have killed someone because they let their imagination, like,
they literally tried to kill someone.
Yeah, like, they could have been really bad for them. Like, and Peyton wouldn't have lived, like, they, and if they would have finally snapped out of that, like, the, I feel like they were disassociated. Like, they were too young to understand what they were really doing, but they knew.
Like, they kind of knew, but they didn't think it through. They just thought, we need to kill her, but did not think about what that actually meant.
And I feel like if they would have actually succeeded, it would have been horrible either way, but also it would have been like a realization down the line, like, wow, I'm a killer. I killed someone at 12 years old. 12.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't, you know, like, it kind of makes me think, like, in a innocence way, I don't think they really knew.
Understood the whole thing. And what's even crazier is when they're in the room, Morgan said, like, she's talking about Anissa, and she's like, because we killed her, or we tried to kill her. And she goes, well, I don't even know if she's alive. She was crying when we left her there. Is she still alive? And the detective said, yeah, she's still alive. And she just went, oh. Like, she wasn't like, oh, thank God, she's still alive, I made a mistake. She was just like, oh.
And also with their responses, it's so young responses.
Yeah.
Yep. Because,
yeah,
you know what?
It's like,
you know,
it's like when the kids get in the car and I'm like, well, how was your day? Good. What'd you learn? Nothing. It's just,
yeah,
just kind of like nonchalant. I have better things to do than sit here and talk to you. Well, Anissa said that they actually seen Slenderman sometimes. They even said that they seen him in the corner of their eyes while they were walking to the park that day. She also said Morgan heard him following them around. Like, they heard a twig snapping, and they knew that was Slender Man following them. Leading up to the stabbing, Morgan began sending several other creepypasta characters to Peyton, saying that they were sitting outside her window, and when she was asleep, they were going to kill her. Which, again, these are 12-year-old girls. Could you imagine how terrified Peyton would be, thinking this thing is out her window watching her sleep and trying to kill her and her family? Morgan started to worry that Peyton would tell someone about what they were doing to her. So she sent Peyton a message that said, "You tell your mother nothing." Which, again, that goes to show that she does understand she's scaring Peyton. She does understand if she gets told on, she's gonna get in trouble.
But it almost seems like bullying in an aspect. Like, guess what, Peyton? This thing is going to be outside your window tonight, and if you tell your mom that we're telling you this, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, bullying in an extreme level.
Yeah. Extremely.
Very extreme level.
Well, Peyton became so afraid of the messages and these supposed characters that were watching her sleep, and she started to sleep facing away from her window. She had to have her blinds closed. She had to have the window locked. It was truly affecting her, like, to where it was affecting her sleep at night. Peyton eventually would tell her mother about the characters, and her mother, like, looked into it with her and showed her, like, these aren't real. Like, they're fake. They cannot hurt you. They won't hurt you. It's not real. But Morgan continued sending the pictures anyways, and Morgan asked the detective during her interview, like, while she's admitting to doing all this, she says, "Is this going to get me, this is going to get me arrested, isn't it? I won't take back any of it." Like, what? So again, she understands that she's going to be in trouble for it, but then she's like, but I'm not going to take any of it back. She even says that she knew it was important to tell the truth because she had been suspended earlier in the year for bringing that hammer to school that we talked about in part one. She said it was a complete accident that she took it to school. She was cleaning her room and she just accidentally put it in her backpack and took it to school. Morgan's
right.
Like, you're not going to carry it or feel a huge hammer, like, what was it, a rubber mallet in your backpack? Like, you know what's in your backpack.
And you know what? Thinking about it, she could have potentially used that to blackmail Peyton into not telling her parents about what they were
going to do. Yeah.
You know, like connecting the dots. I got a
hammer, girl. Like, you tell on me.
Or just taking it to school, opening your backpack. You better keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, you know? I didn't even think about that.
Because they were still friends around this time.
Yeah.
They were already...
Yeah, because they started planning in January and didn't do it until May.
Yep.
That's very true. Well, Morgan's mother said that Morgan has always had trouble showing empathy, even at an early age. Like, she was talking about when she was really, like, really young, they were watching Bambi. And, you know, most kids would start crying and be so sad and upset about it. But Morgan just said, run, Bambi, run. So it started at an early age, kind of being strange. Morgan finally admitted to the detective that even though she was confused as to why they were trying to kill Peyton, she was in fact the one that did stab her. So she did admit, I'm the one that stabbed her. She even blankly said, I'm the one who did the final killing. I really don't know if she's alive, though, because she was still crying when we left. And the detective did confirm at that point that Peyton was, in fact, still alive. Morgan said it was really hard to do it because she doesn't have a lot of friends and has a hard time making the few friends that she did have. She does... She also said that they take full responsibility for doing it. Like, she was just, again, very matter-of-factly like, I know what we did, and we take full responsibility for what we did. The detective then started making her go over the events again. And they do that a lot in interrogations. Like, they want you to retell the story and see if it alters or changes. And Morgan's story does change. Like, I mean, not huge, but, like, at first she's like, well, Anissa grabbed the knife. Well, then the next time she told it, well, Anissa didn't grab the knife, but she told me to grab the knife. And then the next time was, well, Anissa was the one that stabbed her. And then he asked her about it again, and she's like, well, actually, I'm the one that stabbed her. I can't really remember. It's all foggy. Like, she just kind of kept on
going back and forth, almost like, what do I say to not go to jail?
Right.
Basically.
Right. So, again, like I said, Morgan said that she was the one that grabbed the knife, but it was because Anissa told her to. So, she is admitting to grab the knife, but again, she's like, but Anissa told me to do it. So, did Anissa really tell her to do it, or is she just saying that? She said it was all foggy because she was trying to block it out. Morgan very quickly said that her parents didn't have anything to do with it because she mentioned that they put the knife and stuff. I thought it was a duffel bag, but when I rewatched the interview, they actually put it in an old purse that Morgan's mother had given her. And so she's like, yeah, we put it in the old purse, but my parents didn't have anything to do with it. So it's like she understood that them using something that belonged to her parents could implicate them. And so she immediately shut that down and was like, but they didn't have anything to do with it. So again, she understands. She understands what they're doing is wrong and has these consequences, but she does it anyways.
It's just so hard because it's like they're young, but you don't fully understand how mature they are. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're 12, but... Like, I'm going to let you finish the rest of the story because of what you told me earlier and what we found out later on.
Yeah.
But I wonder if what you told me earlier started at such an early age that it messed Morgan up that
much. That much, yeah.
So, we'll continue.
We'll get there.
We'll get there, but yeah. Keep going.
So, Morgan then starts talking faster. She almost seems irritated that the detective keeps asking her the same questions over and over. She then says, I knew this would happen and we would get in trouble. She even said, people that trust you become very gullible. So again, she understands manipulation. Like, she's admitting, they trusted me, so I can make them do whatever I want.
Yeah. And this is Morgan saying this?
This is Morgan.
Okay.
So now we're on Anissa. Anissa kept calling the stabbing doing the deed, which is often a coping mechanism to distance herself from the crime. I heard your snicker. Doing the deed. But yeah, that's often used as a coping mechanism or to distance themselves by not saying, I stabbed her. I did this. They kind of put it to the side, like, it's did the deed. This happened. They don't.
The situation.
Yeah, the situation, the experience. Like, they don't use the actual words of what they did. Anissa then began getting upset when she was recounting the stabbing again, and she kind of did start crying about what happened to Peyton. But again, she's like not full-on sobbing. She's just kind of whimpering. Which, again, if you think a 12-year-old is recounting stabbing her 12-year-old friend, she would be, like, upset. But she was just kind of whimpering. At this point, both girls have admitted to the planning of the crime, the motive, and who stabbed Peyton. As they review the tapes, they begin to try and break down, like, what's going on with the girls, what mental health they could be suffering with. And so I looked to see what they were actually diagnosed with. Morgan was diagnosed with early onset schizophrenia. Doctors testified that she was experiencing hallucinations and delusions, believing Slender Man was real, and that she had to kill Peyton to protect her family. Her condition was considered severe and long term, so it's not like it was a moment of insanity. Like, it was building up to that and wouldn't just go away. Anissa was diagnosed with shared delusional disorder. She did not have schizophrenia, but she was found to be highly suggestible and vulnerable to Morgan's stronger psychosis. She claimed she truly believed harming Peyton was necessary to protect herself and her family, which that has been seen in other cases too.
Oh yeah.
Even like with like paranormal stuff, sometimes they think that maybe one, Jeff, or Josh and I covered Jeff the Talking Mongoose, and they think that that might be actually what started that case, was the dad may have had some kind of psychosis going on, and because they were so remote and secluded that he fully believed this was actually happening, and so his wife and daughter started to believe it because of him, like they were influencing each other. So let's kind of talk about the court hearing. Both girls would end up being charged with first-degree attempted intentional homicide. In December of 2017, Anissa would be sentenced to 25 years in a mental hospital after pleading guilty to being a party of second-degree intentional homicide.
So in 2017, she was sentenced to 25 years?
Yes.
So she would be released in
2042, I think. Hang on. Seven. Let's see. It's 2032.
Dang. Okay. And how old was she when she was sentenced? Because she was 12 at the time.
She was 12 in 2014, 15, 16, 17. So she was 15.
So in 15. At 15 years old, she was sentenced 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
Morgan was convicted, but she was not found guilty due to reason of insanity due to mental disease or defect. She was sentenced to 40 years in a psychiatric hospital. In 2021, Anissa was granted supervised release after only serving 4 years in a mental hospital. So she had 25 years, only served 4 of those years. She did have like some requirements when she was released. She was ordered to live with her father. She had to receive psychiatric treatment and submit to round-the-clock GPS monitoring.
Anissa, she was like influenced.
Yes.
Like,
she's not the one that
she's
actually
like the Mandela staff. Effect, basically.
Yeah, except for Mandela. Not really. Mandela effect is like when you think well, I guess kind of, yeah.
Because it would be like if you hand someone a glass of water and you're like, oh, that has alcohol in it. And they start acting like they're drunk.
Yeah. Placebo effect, kind of.
Placebo effect. Yeah. That's what it's called. Because, I mean, Morgan could have been like,
Do you see a Slenderman? I could see him outside of my eye. And you can see, like, a black.
And again, you're 12 years old. You're easily influenced anyways. And then you add mental illness on top of that. Mm-hmm. Well, the GPS ended up being removed in September of 2023. So she no longer had to keep the GPS monitor. Like, I believe she still had to receive psychiatric treatment. She still had to be supervised, but no longer had to have the GPS monitor.
So in 2021, how old would she have been?
Girl, I don't know.
These are important things to know.
I'm tired. I ain't doing math. I ain't working.
Come on, Audrey. You're slacking.
I know.
If you would like to know how many years old she is in 2021, comment down below.
And I'll make Tori do it. Well, since that she was able to be released early, Morgan was hoping to follow suit. She's like, okay, maybe I can have a chance. So she filed for release three different times, but she ended up withdrawing the first two requests.
Oh, were they in the same psychiatric hospital?
I believe so.
Are you serious? That's insane. So you get to be locked up with your best friend that you try to commit murder with?
They may have kept them. They probably had to keep them separate. I'm not 100% sure that they were in the same one, but if they were, I'm sure they had to keep them separated because, again, they're influencing each other. So they have to separate that. Well, since Anissa got released, Morgan's like, okay, it's my turn. Mm-hmm. So she filed for release three different times. She ended up withdrawing the first two. They took it off the table. No way. But on the third time, she followed through. She's like, I'm doing this. And in April of 2024, it was denied by the judge. Judge said, nope, not happening. He stated that Morgan was still showing signs of being a threat to herself and others. He stated that not only that, the community was also concerned with her release. Because you got to think, if you let them out in the community, what are they going to do? They already did this. They stabbed their best friend. Left her there to suffer, hoping she would die. What are they capable of?
Especially Morgan, because she was the one who was conspiring basically all of it because of her delusions.
Yes.
And all of it. Like, man, that's crazy.
Well, after hearing all the evidence, the judge stated, you know, I'm satisfied with my denial. We're keeping to it. Only 6 months later, she requested dismissal again. 6 months later. This time,
she really wanted out of there. She was having FOMO. No.
Well, I may say this doctor's name wrong. Forgive me. It's not Wakisa. I know that. This time, I think it's Brooke Lundbaum or Lundbaum, something like that. Brooke
Lundbaum. What does it look like?
Well, I was listening. So I was listening to videos on YouTube. And so I didn't have it to spell out. It was an interview. Yeah.
Lundbaum.
She was a doctor and she testified that the now 22-year-old, so she's 22 at this point, Morgan.
Okay.
That the now 22-year-old has not thought about Slenderman in a while. But there were still a few other concerns about her release. She stated that at this time, she was in support of Morgan's release. She did not show signs of being a danger to herself or others. She had experienced consistent signs of schizophrenia. She had showed delusions of Slenderman along with auditory and visual hallucinations, disorganized thinking, and behavior and instability of emotional regulation. She stated that these symptoms were believed to have taken part in the stabbing, but at this time she was no longer showing these symptoms. Morgan claimed that she had been sexually abused at home and her obsession with Slenderman and the other creepypasta lore was an escape for her from her home life at that time. So basically she was being abused and that was her escape, was diving into this fantasy world.
And that's what I was talking about earlier. Because she said, her mom said that she didn't handle like emotion well, like during the Bambi movie.
Mm-hmm.
That almost makes me think, like, because kids are not born evil. I don't think that.
Nurture versus nature.
Mm-hmm.
See, I believe what I think. I kind of think the same thing, but I think there is nature involved. I think you can be more susceptible. I think you can have a chemical imbalance or something like schizophrenia. And I kind of think that with Morgan, I think the cards are stacked against her with the mental illness. And then you throw that on top of it, and it just snowballs from there.
Yeah. But, I mean, it could have started very early on, and that's why she was so weird at school,
She had to learn how to shut feelings off and not deal with this and disassociate from everything,
going into the interview, disassociating from everything.
Well, Morgan stated that it was difficult for her to process everything at the time due to her mental illness.
Wow, imagine that. Didn't even know Audrey was going to say that next, and we were just talking about that.
Basically, fantasy would blur with reality. The doctor also expressed concern that Morgan was vulnerable to manipulation or exploitation due to her experience as a kid, just like we were saying. It was difficult for her to create relationships. Again, same thing. She probably had trust issues if she was being abused at home. She didn't know who to trust, and it caused those issues. She then stated that Morgan had made headway, though, in her relationship with her mother, her grandmother, and her brother since her father passed away, which I'm not speculating. I'm not going to speculate. I couldn't find who she was abused by or, like...
But if you connect the dots, it's read just, in between
the lines. It's odd that the relationship started building after the father passed away. But I have no idea, so I'm not going to say he did it. Like, I'm not saying that at all. But it's just, it's weird that...
Just making an observation. Yeah. But I'm on the same wavelength as you right now.
They said that she seemed to have a good support system, and if she was released, she would be able to keep working on those relationships and building them. She would need to continue working on her mental health through her entire life, but that they had noticed major improvements in the last 10 months. One attorney brought up the question that if she's doing so well in the mental health facility, then why should she be released? Like, if she's doing so great, why are y'all trying to push her out? And that's when another doctor testified, and they said that basically that facility has done everything they could at that point. She's basically reached the end of how much they can help her, and she needed to learn how to further better her mental health on her own with the help of professionals and gain some independence. So, like, they've done everything they can at this point.
Yeah, I mean, she's been in there since she was, like, 12.
Mm-hmm. And she's 22.
She hasn't had any independence at all.
None. So, there's nothing more for her to gain staying at the hospital. She's a young woman with great potential and will not have the opportunity to experience that until she is out in the world and able to engage with other peers. Both doctors agreed it would be in her best interest to leave the facility. They don't want her to stay in the hospital and become hopeless. That would have more of a negative effect on her and could create an issue within herself, creating a larger chance of her becoming a danger to herself. Her risk to others would stay the same if she stayed or was released, but her risk to herself would grow if she stayed. The doctor that has been with Morgan since 2014 also testified. She stated that Morgan said she could not forgive herself for what they did. She had acknowledged what happened, and she hates that she did what she did and feels she is a different person now. She struggled many years to forgive herself and has trouble recalling different parts from her childhood. So again,
that goes into play with disassociation.
Yeah.
Like what I said earlier, it must have been God working that Peyton survived that day.
Yeah.
Because a 12-year-old getting stabbed 19 times.
19 times.
Not only would it have been hard on her family and taking an innocent life, but it also, like, if Morgan actually would have killed her, she would probably still be insane.
Could she come back from that?
No, I really don't think she could have, because now, like, she's actually sympathizing, you know?
Like, I messed up. I know what I did was wrong. I messed up.
Because in the interrogation room, she's like, yep, I did it.
Yeah, I take responsibility, but had no emotion for it. Like,
okay. Yeah. So it's definitely improvement. Yeah. That would be a valid reason to argue in court.
And kind of like we were talking with the Menendez brothers, that's the whole point with mental mental facilities and jail is to rehabilitate some of these people. They made a bad mistake when they were young.
Hurt people hurt people.
Yeah. So let's give them what they need to help them, except for child predators. To me, gone. Don't have anything to do for them. Get out. There's no help.
No help whatsoever.
Well, they discussed possible stresses that may come up, including being known in the Slender Man killings. However, she also believes that Morgan is ready to take it on and that she should be released. The state, however, did not believe she was ready. Of course, they're concerned what the risk was by releasing her to others due to the nature and circumstances of the crime. Because she was 12. Because Peyton was her best friend. Because she did stab her, not once, not twice, 19 times.
It was a crime of passion.
And then left her. That was their concern. Not only did she stab her, they purposely left her there.
And then when they brought her in, there was no emotion.
Right. She didn't. It was almost like she didn't care. They believe there was still a substantial risk to herself and others. They state that most people are not capable of committing the offense that Morgan did. Not only the stabbing, but, like I said, leaving Peyton there alone. The attorney argued she should at least have the chance to prove herself with conditions upon her release. Which, again, kind of goes like we're talking about. You did your crime. You did your time. Here's your chance to prove yourself.
But also, I mean, she didn't really do her time.
Oh, she was in a mental health, I think she went to where she needed to. I don't think
going to jail. But she was sentenced for 40 years.
Yeah, and we're only at, yeah.
That's what I mean by it.
But if she's showing improvement and they're basically she's improved as far as we can get her, she needs additional that we can't provide, then it makes sense to release her under circumstances.
Or release her to a more advanced facility.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at that point, it's like, can you really say they did their time? I mean, the other girl, I can't even...
4 years, Anissa.
4 years, Anissa. I just don't think it's rightfully served at that point.
Yeah, because you got to think with Peyton, she has to live with this trauma every day of her life.
She probably has major trust issues.
Her mom and dad have to live with this the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I can understand in some circumstances whenever they're released early... off of good behavior or whatever, but in others, I'm like...
Yeah. It's very complicated. It's not black or white at all.
Oh, no.
There is so much gray. Yeah. It's just very... It's hard.
Different with every single case. I could go through a nitpick I think that person needed more time. This person should have never even gotten time.
And then you have that reoffend. They get a slap on the hand and they're released to go reoffend again. And it's just kind of like, where's the justice? There is no justice. Well, the judge confirmed it was a very serious offense, especially considering they were children. He finally decided that under the circumstances that he did agree she should be released. He stated that she didn't present a significant risk to herself or the community. He is taking into consideration all sides to make this decision. He then granted the petition. He said she can be released under certain circumstances. She would not be able to just walk out completely free. Her team would have to establish a plan. So her team had to establish she can be released, but here's what we're going to do to protect herself and the community from her. These are the steps we're taking. So June 17th of 2025, so just 2 months ago, they approved a release plan that stated that Morgan could be released to a group home. They did... Let me think about how I need to say this. So originally they were just going to release her back into the community that she was at, in a group home there. But Peyton's mother objected and was like, I don't want Morgan in any proximity to my child. It is not fair. It is not right for you to release her back to the community that my child lives. She has to live with this, the trauma of what they did, and be looking over her shoulder every minute, looking to see if Anissa and Morgan are there.
So that just goes to show that Peyton still lives there in the same town.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like in their 20s now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you could connect the dots, she probably has trust issues to move to any other different town.
You don't want to be away from your parents? Like,
I mean, that... Oh, God. I can't even imagine.
Can't imagine. So Morgan's attorney said, you know what? What if we send her to Sun Prairie instead of being closer to the victim's family after Peyton's mom objected to it? They also included the condition that any changes to GPS monitoring or placement would require court approval and not just administration. So her team can't just be like, oh, we're changing this. Like, it has to go through a whole court process to do it, which I agree. On July 1st, 2025, Morgan appeared virtually in court for a final hearing. The judge reaffirmed approval for the move to the group home and required 24/7 monitoring. Morgan's attorney emphasized that Sun Prairie Group Home offers better access to therapeutic services, including sewing, knitting, gardening, and he agreed. Like, I think that's a better placement for her anyways. They have all this stuff to offer. It keeps her away from the victim's family. Or I should say survivor. I'm going to call Peyton survivor because girl survived. Like, she...
I'm a survivor.
Exactly. Well, the exact release date was not confirmed, but it was estimated to happen around August 4th of 2025. So just earlier this month, August 4th, 2025, is when they estimated that she could be released to this group home. However, on August 8th, the Sun Prairie facility declined the placement of Morgan with them. They said, nope, we're not taking her. They cited that the publicity surrounding the case would be an issue. A new location has not been confirmed, and Morgan remains in the Winnebago Mental Health Institute in Wisconsin. And so I tried to look up, like, where Peyton is at today, and to be honest, there's not a lot of information, which I can imagine, because again, if Anissa's released already, they're talking about releasing Morgan. She probably doesn't want to be in the public eye. She doesn't want to recount this all the time. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't.
She's probably trying to move on.
Exactly.
As best as she can.
Yes. Well, in 2019, Peyton did speak publicly for the first time for a 2020 interview. Go watch it. It's good to see her. She's like, she is a badass. She stated, without the whole situation, I wouldn't be who I am. She also said that the experience inspired her to pursue a future in the medical field. As of 2022, Peyton was attending college and doing very well for herself. And that's about all I could find on Peyton.
Well, good for her.
I know. And which, again, like we said, I can understand her not wanting to be in the public eye and being worried about them finding her again. Because, yeah, they can say they're better. They can say that they've made all this work, and which they may have. And if they have, great. But as Peyton, I can understand that fear of them knowing where you're at, knowing, you know, where to find her. What if they're just pretending? What if they're manipulating the system, you know? Then that would be terrifying.
I mean, also, like, I don't know if I would really be too worried about it now because of how much time has passed and it was just like a little fantasy with Anissa.
Yeah.
Morgan, I don't know about her.
Yeah.
She could, I feel like she's the type of person to flip a switch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was already very easy to like manipulate people at an early age.
Yeah.
And it's hard to let go of those habits, you know what I mean?
So, it would take a lot of work.
And I really don't think the time, like, I think she should stay in the, she's making this much improvement, but is she going to continue making this improvement?
But I mean, like, even Anissa, 4 years.
Yeah.
4 years? That's insane to me. Like, that's crazy. After she was manipulated that easily by Morgan, she fully helped with the entire plan to plan it out and physically assaulted Peyton by shoving her, hitting her head into the wall, and doing everything that led up to that. She's, I mean, no, she didn't hold the knife and stab Peyton, but she was just as much a part of it as Morgan.
And I mean, who's to say, like, she doesn't get manipulated in another way. You know what I mean? Like, people get into some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And she just got released just really easily. Like, too easy. Why go through this whole entire process, find out she's involved, you charge her, take her to court, just to release her 4 years later? Like,
and
what?
She's 12, so that means she's released at 16. Her mind is still not fully developed.
Yeah, like, what? And she's released to her dad?
Like, yeah, her dad.
Not even...
And then they take the GPS monitoring away pretty quickly.
It's just like...
It's insane. Insane.
You know what I was thinking, too? You know how that guy was on his jog and he found Peyton?
The cyclist who's on a bicycle, yeah.
Could have ended really badly if that guy wasn't good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if she went all the way up to that sidewalk to try to get some help, what if that guy was sick in the mind?
So it's just her up.
You know, like,
she definitely had an angel with her.
Yeah, guardian angel for sure.
And to fight. Like, I was watching the interview with her, and they were kind of recounting her saying, and I did get a little bit more information when the cop came up. Peyton was still able to talk, and she was like, my friend Morgan did it. So that's how they knew they had something to do with it. She said, my friend Morgan did it. And they said, what did they do? And she said, they stabbed me. And they said, with what? And she said, a knife. And then she, like, held up her hand and was like, this big. Like, so she was able to give them details before her body started basically shutting down. They said that she was basically in shock, and that's how she was able to relay some of that information. But then your body can only, there's only so much adrenaline, and it started shutting down and getting scary. So she's a beautiful girl too. She's so pretty.
We should go watch the interviews now.
Yeah. My heart breaks for her mom too, because to think you trusted these girls with your daughter. They went to her house, and this is what they do.
And they had been planning it for...
And to still, like, be friends with her while they're planning, knowing we're going to stab you one day, or we're going to try to kill you one day, but still remain her friend.
Just wild. Not right.
It is wild. So tell us what you guys think. Did they get enough time? Should they have stayed longer?
Mind
Should
you,
they go released?
Keep it in mind. The time that they did get wasn't prison or jail, a black hole, blacklisted site, nothing. It was literally just a mental
health facility. But again, I do agree with that, because it wasn't just a kid doing a bad thing. They had mental.
I think what they should have done, this is just me thinking right off the bat, once they started seeing improvement with their mental health, they should move them to prison.
But here's the issue.
That's when you serve the time.
Here's the issue, though. A lot of inmates that go to prison, innocent ones. Think of innocent ones that are sent to prison. Once they're released from prison, even though they are innocent from their initial crime, and say they're released because they were able to find DNA evidence and find out it wasn't them. Once they're released back into the population, a lot of times they reoffend, because the prison system is so jacked up, they don't know any other way to live. So they fall back on that. So I don't think sending them to prison would have helped anything. I do agree that they went where they needed to be. But then the question is, how long? It's not necessarily to punish them. It's to get them the mental health that they need, because they had all these issues before.
And also, I mean, the people got to think, like, you've got to put yourself in the survivor's shoes, in Peyton's shoes.
I'd be interested to know what she thinks. Was it long enough? Does she agree?
Like, she can't make all the, like, decisions, you know? It has to be the judge, but she should get some say. Like,
I wonder if they did when they offered them the plea deal or whatever. I wonder if they consulted with the family and says, hey, if they plead guilty, this is what we're offering. Did they agree to that? Or did they ask the family, like, do you agree with this? Like, is this okay with you? Or did they just do it? Because sometimes they do. They do sometimes go to the family and say,
we're thinking about releasing.
Here's a plea deal. Or they'll say, here's the plea deal. If they plead guilty, we get to avoid taking the stand and dragging everybody through this. But if they plead guilty, we're taking death off the table. Or we're taking this off the table. Or we're, you know, they
chop up so many deals.
So, it's just interesting.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, because if I were Peyton and I was 12 years old, going to the park with my friends, and they just start stabbing me 19 times, I almost die. I finally get justice for what these girls did to me, but...
Then they're released.
Then they get released. Not even 5 years later. I'm sorry, but I've gone through some traumatic events in my life, and I am still not over them. You know, it takes a long time to get over
the emotional trauma and everything else.
And physical trauma. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
she was 12, stabbed 19 times. Like, that is just...
Oh, my gosh.
And yeah. These girls, like, they never worked a day in their life either, probably.
Damn. Like, I wonder if they had chores. I wonder if they have, like, chores at the facility. Like, you know, you have... I'm sure. I wonder if they did kind of like prison, you know, you've got
the means to do this. What they do, like, at... We should look into that.
Like, I wonder if we should go to the Rose State Hospital and see if we can, like, interview somebody there and be like, okay, what's it like? Like, what's a day in the life of somebody that is here for a crime? Now, do they just get to sit in their cell all day and do whatever they want? Or do they have, you know, certain requirements that they have? It'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, so in jail, do they have chores?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, you have the cooks, you know, they have to be on good behavior and everything. They can't be on solitary confinement, but most of the time they have jobs. I'm also thinking about covering the Angola State Prison, Louisiana State Prison.
Oh, yeah.
Addie and I got to go tour the state prison in Louisiana, and they have jobs, and they get paid for the jobs. Now, it's not like $15 an hour by any means.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking, like, cents on a dollar, like, but that prison is 100%, how did they put it, self-reliant. So they have inmates that are HVAC men, like repairing air conditioners. They have handymen. They have they grow their own food there. They have cattle there that they grow. They make their own mattresses there. Like, it was so interesting. So one of these days I'm going to cover the Angola State Prison. It was pretty cool.
That would be good.
Yeah. So, I guess that's it.
It was a pretty lengthy episode, last part two, so we gotta make it.
We got a little chatty Cathy over here.
You know.
It's just...
I had a coffee before.
I know.
Y'all couldn't tell.
So. It is thought-provoking. It definitely is thought-provoking.
And you see the dots start to connect to, like, with everything. You know.
If you know, we know.
If you know, you know. No,
we will. Okay, I'll probably have to edit that out so we don't get copyright. All right, guys. Well, that's it for this week. I think next week I'm going to try to have Seth back. And then Josh is working on his case. He's going to bring one. So hopefully he'll have it ready. No pressure, Josh. You have a deadline.
So with that being said, I'm thinking of like a conspiracy. I like talking about a bunch of different cases, just not going into full detail. So should we do like an episode where we just...
What if we have like a yappy hour once a week or once a month? We can't do once a week. There's no way. But like just one night, we need to get Seth and Josh in here and we can just have like a yappy hour to where we all just discuss different things, different cases and how we feel.
Because I really do feel like, I mean, I know a lot of old cases, but there's a lot of new cases coming to light that... I'm gonna definitely start getting a lot more attention that I would like to stay updated on. Oh my gosh, the Idahoan murders. There's updates on that one too. When that first came out, that like literally actually made me cry. Like that.
Yeah, it was so heartbreaking.
It was very. I don't know why it was so close to home to me, but it was just like, it was horrible. That whole entire case. I hope that man rots in jail. Brian Kohlberger. Brick you, boy.
And he's in solitary confinement because the prisoners were giving him trouble. It's like, yeah, it's what you get.
Yeah, it's dumb. A-hole. No cuss words on the podcast, but he, oh my gosh.
We never done. All right, we gotta wrap it up. These people are like, get me out of here.
We never done cuss words. We don't say a whole lot of cuss words.
We try to keep it to a minimum.
PG.
Because our mom listens.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Anyways, child.
All right.
We're out of here.
Bye, guys. See y'all next week. Well, I won't see you next week. Josh will probably see you next week. Seth will see you next week.
Then Josh.
Then Josh.
Then you're back.
Then I'm back again, probably.
Bye. I'm going to zoom right into your face right there. Looking like an alien. Hit the red cord. What?